Okay, well, welcome to SharePoint Server 2013 Best Practices. I am Christopher Harrison, and I'm very happy today to be joined by Brian Alterman, who is SharePoint expert extraordinaire, he's really going to be leading us through this course in regards to best practices. So, Brian, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Well, my name, is Brian Alterman, and I'm going to be spending some time with you today talking about the best practices. There's a lot happening with SharePoint, and what we're going to try to focus on in this course is ways to make things better for you. Again, my name is Brian Alterman. I think that's the third time I've told you that, just in case you forget that.
Okay, and, duly noted. I'm going to make a note on that, okay, Brian.
Just so we don't forget later on.
Yep, I got it. Okay.
You can reach me at brian.alterman@cbtnuggets.com. If you have any questions, post.
That's
this
the fourth
class.
Time you've mentioned your name now.
And I work for a company called CBT Nuggets, and we do some on-demand video training for Microsoft and Cisco and Juniper and CompTIA and project management. So if you want any chunk-size information about any of those products and technologies, you're welcome to check out cbtnuggets.com. I've co-authored a couple Microsoft Press books, the SharePoint 2010 Administrator's Companion, as well as the SharePoint 2013 Administration Inside Out book. I love to travel, and I love to play golf. I live in Arizona. I think that's where my bills go are in Arizona. I travel a lot. I've spoken at over 20 SharePoint conferences this year, or SharePoint events, if you include SharePoint Saturdays. So I like to stay in the community, and that helps me stay in the SharePoint community as well as travel and get my miles.
And I'm Christopher Harrison. I'm a longtime MCT. I was a certified trainer for 15 years. I guess technically I still am, but that's now no longer my full-time job. I'm now a content developer here at Microsoft Learning. Been here for actually just over 6 months, which is pretty crazy. It seems like just yesterday I got my nifty little blue badge. I got my start with VIC-20, Commodore 64. I still miss my Commodore 64, I got to tell you.
I see that.
Yes, and I mostly focus these days on doing web development and Office 365 development, doing mostly MVA and some courseware as well. Outside of geekdom, you can find me spending some time with my wife, my four-legged child, and outrunning distances that most people wouldn't consider normal.
So we're going to dig in, and we really have six areas that we're going to talk about in this course. And the first one's going to be planning for SharePoint. Then we're going to dip into a little bit about capacity planning. We're going to talk about probably one of the most important sections in this course, and that's training. And that's really what makes any deployment is successful, is making sure your end users understand what the training is, I mean, what the course is or what the application is. We'll look at just some ideas when it comes to best practices for installing SharePoint. We'll talk about the updates that are available to make sure you stay current, but maybe you don't need to roll everything out. We'll talk about the different types of updates that Microsoft rolls out, and then we'll just dabble a little bit about optimization and troubleshooting. So that's kind of our agenda for this course. Who should be here? Well, if you're dialed in, I'm hoping that you are a beginner to intermediate knowledge SharePoint IT pro, that you're at least familiar with some of the SharePoint administration, because we're not going to talk about the details of deploying SharePoint. We're going to talk about the best practices. We're assuming you already know that piece of it. So we're going to assume that you know that piece, and we're going to go into the best ways found based on repetitive patterns of performing certain tasks available inside of SharePoint. We're going to have a balance of slide decks and PowerPoint presentations, as well as some demos to give us some exposure to some real world. And we're going to talk about our real world experiences as we go through the course. So that's kind of like the format for this course today. We're going to begin, as I said, talking about the planning strategy for SharePoint. We need to make sure that we are ready for this. It's not one of those deals on Friday afternoon. Happy hour starts at 4. I've got 2 hours. I'm going to just run a roll out SharePoint and still make happy hour 4 o'clock.
Sure.
So we can't really be doing that. We need to have some sort of planning process in place, and that's what we're going to begin with. One of the things that we're going to talk about is a naming convention. If you've ever inherited a system and you've walked in and you've got names that just don't make any sense to you, it'd be nice if we had some sort of naming convention as we start the deployment of SharePoint. Then we're going to take a look at the planning process for the physical and logical infrastructure, and we'll define the difference between the two so you know what to focus on when you're talking about or deploying and planning deployment of that infrastructure for SharePoint 2013. So let's talk about naming conventions. I've gone into a consulting opportunities, and I've seen names that I was like, where would they even come up with these names?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like they just randomly threw some characters together. Hey, look, it's a name.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense to me. You know, is this something their dog's name or something like that? So, you know, let's use that. But if you look at consistent naming convention, I'm talking about all different levels here. We've got web app or service app names. Something that's consistent, mvademo.microsoft.com would be a nice application name for a web app. Now, what I would do with MVA demo, if I was going to have a farm or a URL or service apps associated with that farm, I could actually have service apps and how all of them would have MVA demo in them. So I know what that instance of search is or why that instance of managed metadata service is there. It's specifically for the MVA demo farm. We also would have an app pool name that complements that. An app pool name would be MVA demo. And then we could share that. If you're going to have a generic app pool for all of your web apps, you could have a MVA demo underscore generic app pool. So you know when as I create my additional web apps, I use this MVA demo generic app pool. Database names, some sort of consistency with them. The web app name underscore content one underscore DB. Again, my opinion is with underscore DB, you get better performance. It's totally not true, but I'm convincing everyone it's going to be that way in all my sessions.
And one thing, actually, if I can jump in real quick, and we throw the slide back up. One thing that's worth highlighting here that Brian has on his naming convention is you'll notice that it's MVA demo, MVA demo, MVA demo. And this is a very important thing because when you're talking about SharePoint, you've got the component inside of SharePoint, and then you've got two components inside of IIS between the app pool and the web application. And then, of course, you've got something inside of SQL. And a lot of times, it's going to be different people that are going to be in those different spots, or maybe it is you. And so when you're looking at a database inside of SQL, you want to be able to easily know intuitively based on its name what this hooks up to inside of SharePoint. Or if you're inside of IIS, you want to know intuitively what's the database or what's the link inside of SharePoint. So it's going to make it that much easier if you have those consistent names. And it doesn't necessarily matter exactly what naming convention it is that you use. You could absolutely use something like that. You could go slightly different. But really, you want to make sure that it's intuitive, that it makes sense, and that you are consistent, and that everybody knows what your naming conventions are.
Yes, and that'll make just the troubleshooting process much easier for you when you're looking at, or if you inherit a project that you're trying to deconstruct. And I did say deconstruct on purpose. So managed paths, we want to make sure we use proper names for managed paths. If we're going to create a bunch of site collections with projects for our individual projects, create a managed path just for projects within the web app. So we know if I'm a project manager, I know how to find what URL to use to dig in and find all of the projects that I'm responsible for. Any sites, make sure the sites are intuitive. So when you're looking at the URL, we just kind of inherit or we append that URL from the web app. Then we add projects as a managed path, and we have a site collection. And then within that site collection, we have subsites where we have something like project deliverables, would be a potential subsite within project A, within project B, within project C, et cetera. So we want to make sure we have consistency there with a naming strategy. Service accounts, make sure we have a consistency with service accounts. I try to use SP in all my service accounts names, so I know they're SharePoint specific and not a SQL account. So when I'm digging through Active Directory, which accounts am I working with? Am I working with SQL accounts? Am I working with SharePoint accounts? So this gives me some consistency with that. And lastly, your usernames. Now, if you look at mine, I'm kind of hosed. If you use first initial and last name, I'm Balderman. If you use first name and first initial last name, I'm Brianna. So either way, I don't really have a good name for mine, but at least I know it's consistent. I know when I'm logging into Microsoft.com, it's Balderman. It's first initial last name.
Yeah. For me, if we go first initial last name, I wind up with Cherison, which sort of sounds like a Pokemon character. Yeah. But it's better than when I'm at some place that only allows 8 characters, because then I wind up being Chorizo, because I lose the N at the end.
Yes.
And I'd rather be a Pokemon character than Chorizo. Although everybody loves Chorizo.
Chorizo is kind of cool.
Yeah,
actually,
it
is.
Yeah.
So then maybe that'll be the next character in Pokemon.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go. All right, so have some sort of naming convention. This is all part of your planning strategy. So when you roll out SharePoint, this is all defined. And it's easier for you, like I said, down 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the road, you can come in, you can jump into Central Admin or PowerShell. You can jump into IIS. You can jump into data and SQL Server. And you'll know what you're looking for, and you'll know what those items are talking to each other because of the fact of the naming convention that you've defined. Now, site collections or site titles, we want to make sure we use complete names and not abbreviation. So if we've got something called CBTM Private Company, try not to use short terms for those private company. Try to use CBT Nuggets Private Company. So we know that it's a name. And I'm not trying to figure out, is that private? Is that comp? Is that compensation? We know exactly what we're using. Also, try to avoid the use of spaces. Notice I'm like down here. I've got CBT Space Nugget Space Training. Every time you have a space, there's a %20 that's consumed. Let's try to avoid that and come up with a name that avoids the spaces so we don't have the %20, because it's kind of a pain to use that when you're trying to cut and paste or you're trying to remember, okay, what was that site name again? Again, it's back to consistency. You know there's no spaces in any of our URLs. I know it's going to be Microsoft or mba.microsoft.com. I don't need to worry about spaces.
Exactly. Yeah, and one of the things that you can do, one of the strategies that you can take is just simply type whatever it would be with spaces. That's going to be the name. But when you punch it in for the URL, just make sure that you don't have any spaces inside of there. And again, it's that consistency for really just that ease of use.
All right, so naming conventions. We've got that piece figured out. Let's take a look at the logical and physical infrastructure and get an understanding of what each of these are. First off, what we have here is a physical infrastructure. And what you can see here is we have the SharePoint 2013 farm, and we have our Office Web Apps farm over here. And remember, in 2013, those are separate farms. And what we have in our SharePoint 2013 farm, we have a physical or virtual web front-end server. So we have two of those, Web 1 and Web 2. We have an application server. We have four of those, app 1, 2, 3, and 4. So that's more of our second tier. And then down here, we have our legacy databases of file shares. We have SQL 1 and SQL 2. We have a high availability solution set up, whether it be mirroring or always on or some sort of high availability data redundancy environment down in our SQL world. And then over here, we have a separate farm of our Office Web Apps. And it suggested about 10,000 for every 10,000 users, you have a separate or another server in your Office Web Apps farm. But, you know, redundancy provides that high availability, and we want to make sure we have duplicate servers or redundant servers over there. Now, notice up here we have a virtual environment for our web front end and our app servers and our OWA servers or Office Web App servers. We want to make sure that and kind of take advantage of the virtualization of Hyper-V. And down here, we have more of a physical environment. Over on the right-hand side, we're looking at virtualized host servers that are available to us. So this is the server, the hardware, and how we're going to roll that content out or deploy the different roles that are available to us in that SharePoint world. So the physical infrastructure is that way. If we look at the logical infrastructure, it's how we build our farm out. What application pools are we going to have? What web apps are we going to have? And the names of those web apps. And that goes back to the previous topic around the naming convention. I know very easily what my naming convention is going to be based on some guidelines or some governance policies of our deployment and our naming conventions. Same with our service apps. We have search, we have managed metadata, user profile services. I may have multiple instances of those. If so, I'm going to have an MVA demo search service instance. I'm going to have an MVA demo managed metadata, MVA demo user profile. And oh no, those services are hosting content or responding to content for specific web apps. And I may have other services, a CBT Nuggets search, CBT Nuggets managed metadata, and there's hosting content for different web applications there. So we have a logical infrastructure that we can use as well and build out and make sure we use that naming convention when doing so.
Yeah, one thing that I would point out, again, kind of going back to the slide there, is you'll notice that we've got web application, web application, web application, all inside of one application pool, that unless you have a very specific reason to split a web app out into its own separate application pool, maybe for stability purposes because you're going to be doing testing, maybe for security purposes because you want it to use a different set of credentials, unless you have a very specific reason to split that off, group them together. That probably the most common performance issue that I see on SharePoint deployment is people just walking through, create a web app, they go with the defaults, which is to create a brand new application pool, and then they wind up with, you know, 8-10 web applications, they wind up with 8-10 app pools, and they start wondering, well, why are things going so slow? And that's the reason why, is because you've got all those different application pools. And again, oversimplification here, but essentially every app pool that you create is going to wind up being a separate instance of IIS. Oversimplification, I know. But it's
gets the point across.
Yeah, it gets the point across. Yeah. And so every time that you have a new application pool that's going to be running SharePoint, it's almost like having another copy of SharePoint up and running, because all those DLLs, all that cache memory that could theoretically be shared across multiple web applications can't be shared because of the fact that each web app is in its own separate pool. So if you put all the web apps into one pool, now we can share that, and that's going to drive down your memory usage and increase sharing across your web applications.
Now, Christopher, ironically, some people I've spoken to think it's more efficient and more optimized if they do have each web app in an app, in a separate application pool. And I've had people say, well, I read somewhere where if I have each app, web app in its own app pool, it's more efficient.
I've never seen that.
Yeah. So be careful on that strategy, as Christopher talked about here. So this is a slide that I put together. It has the different components of the logical infrastructure of a SharePoint farm here. So we have a SharePoint farm. We have the app pools up here that we create, and we have our web applications with app pools, and we have service applications that are associated with the web applications. I tried to do the best with my arrows. So let's start with the SharePoint 2013 farm. We have our config database and our central admin content database that's associated with the farm. We have our application pools. Within the application pools, we have our web apps. The applications, or web applications, are associated with the service apps. Most service apps have at least one database. Search happens to have four. I think user profile service has three. So it's at least one database for most service apps. So we have multiple databases created in the SQL Server world for these service applications. Within our web applications, we have our site collections. Now, every web application has at least one database. So with that one database or multiple databases, as we add our site collections, they are stored in those databases down here. And then, of course, within our site collections, we have our subsites, our list and libraries, and our items and documents. So this is a breakdown of the SharePoint 2013 farm, looking at the application pools, the service apps, how they tie into the SQL Server world using the web app databases, the service app databases, and then eventually that's where our site collections are stored as well. So just a little pictorial of the format for that logical infrastructure. So let's take a look at the rollout that I have. And I just have virtualized world where I've got a separate image for my domain controller. And then I have a second one for my SharePoint and SQL combined. It's a smaller environment. And then my third one is for an OW, my Office Web Apps environment. So we'll take a peek at that real briefly so you can kind of see that works out here. So here I am in Central Admin. And if I go into my web apps, first, you're going to see I have a web app for CBT Nuggets. We have our default SharePoint Central Admin, my Managed Metadata's web app, which is really my content type hub, my My Sites, and then my MTP portal, so different portal environment, and then a record center. So I have all these as separate web apps. Now, could be a little bit overkill with SharePoint 2013. These could be a single web app with separate site collections, but it really depends on your deployment. We'll drill into, let's go back to application management, and we'll go into view all site collections. And based on the web app over here, you're going to see I have CBT Nuggets. I have three site collections here, the MVA demo that we've talked about, search, and then I have a SharePoint 2010 site collection I built out here. And we're going to see that in a different course where we're talking about upgrading from SharePoint 2010 to SharePoint 2013. But right now, I have a 2010 specific site collection that's out there. So it's that web application down to a site collection level. And then if you go into the MVA demo site, actually, let's just jump up to MTP portal up here. You're going to see over here, I've got a portal that's set up for us to be able to log into. So this is just a quick understanding of what we have going on. And as I mentioned here, We've got Central Admin set up as a web app, and we've got three different virtual images with a DC being on one, SharePoint SQL on a second one, and my Microsoft Office web apps on a third one. But they're all talking or communicating with each other, so we're good to go there. Now, while that's opening up, I want to go back to Application Management and Central Admin. And notice this this status bar here. This talks about there's some detected issues. We can view these issues by clicking here. And once I click on here, it's going to give me a list of these issues. And they talk about different portions of our infrastructure. And what I like to do is to quickly fix all these, because it works very easily, is I go to items here, or I go to my list, and I grab my new items. I grab all the items, and then I go to items here, and then I do a delete item. And now all of these problems are gone away. So if you're ready to, you know, to meet with your manager for a review, and you come into Central Admin, your pink ribbon, it makes you look like your farm is running perfectly.
No, I wouldn't recommend. That's not a best practice.
That's not a best practice at all. In fact, that's a worst practice. That is worst practice. All that does is temporarily clean off that status bar. But when those automated timer jobs come through, they're going to start repopulating. So that was a joke as far as the best practice. That's absolutely a worst practice. Look at those items that are in there. You can go back to review problems and solutions, and those problems will start popping back in as the timer jobs. Report those, and then make sure you address those. And don't take those lightly, because those can impact the performance of your SharePoint 2013 farm. So just check out those and make sure you troubleshoot those problems that are reported, because those are just automatically looked at by the farm by using health checks and reports that information to you. So that's a bad practice, not a best practice here. All right, so next, let's see here. I think that is just a review. We talked about a naming convention throughout the entire farm. Make sure you have that naming convention. And also, we now should have a better understanding of the physical versus that logical infrastructure that you have whenever you deploy a SharePoint farm. So we're going to go ahead and take a short break and move into our next topic and continue our conversation about best practices for SharePoint 2013.
Sounds perfect.